How can you fight a legend, especially one that continues to win favor and impress her superiors? How can you fight a myth that they built from nothing?
Maybe if your superiors learned the truth, they'd do the right thing. They'd realize that she's a Minok, gnawing at the heart of their ideals. That she's a fiction, all smoke and mirrors. That the legend is indeed a lie. That she'll one day betray the First Order like she's betrayed everything else she's ever professed to love. Cardinal is suddenly in front of her, fervor burning in his dark eyes.
Then give me the evidence so I can end this. End her.
Vi grins. All right, then. Let me tell you about the beginning of Brendel's end. 14. On Parnassus, 10 years ago. After she left the Skyre, Phasma never looked back. Her warriors had always considered her their true leader, and their real loyalties were no longer hidden. No one spoke of Keldo or the rest of the Skyre or the Claws. No one spoke of regret. They were silent as they traversed the rock spires that made the Skyre land so treacherous. While Gosta scouted ahead, Torben helped Brendel again, and Phasma, Carr, and Siv helped the troopers. Despite the inescapable noises made by anchoring their claws and leaping from rock to rock, no one from the tribe stirred as they left, not even the sentries. When they reached the borderlands, the last Skyre sentry was asleep in his hammock. Later, secretly and out of earshot of Phasma, her warriors discussed this peculiarity, and it was mentioned that perhaps their leader had slipped something into that night's stew to aid the group's leave-taking. Phasma had served her people personally, and they had considered it an honor. Her warriors and the First Order folk had, of course, been served first. After leaving the snoring sentry behind, they couldn't help considering that perhaps Phasma's gesture of goodwill had been less an honor and more an insurance policy. Not that they had a word for that in the Skyre. Still, they knew that something was up, and it was chilling, seeing this new side of Phasma. Siv was undergoing her own personal crisis at the time. As the keeper of the Detraxers, she had been raised to understand that her duty was to keep her people alive and healthy by withdrawing the essence of their dead members and crafting the Oracle Salve for those left behind. Leaving with Phasma and taking both Detraxers meant that she was abandoning, betraying, and possibly dooming the majority of her band. She felt it keenly. But she had made her choice, and so she continued without complaint. Phasma was the key to a brighter future, she hoped, for all the Skyre. They would one day bring the riches of the First Order to their people, and then they would no longer need the salve. Rather than going directly through the borderlands and into Baldur's territory, where claw sentries might raise an alarm, Phasma angled east. Her warriors followed without question, but it was considered a bold move. The Skyre knew little about this region, only that the rocks rose highest near the sea, and that there was very little to scavenge there. If the land had been ripe or welcoming, Baldur would have worked to extend his territory. But there seemed to be a pall over the area, as if there was a reason no one wished to go there. The borderlands didn't end so much as the Skyre and the Claws independently came to the conclusion that the land wasn't worth fighting for. Just before dawn, Phasma called her group close on an outcropping that afforded enough room for everyone to sit or perch relatively close. Very little was visible by starlight, and they had no fire. Only the flashing bits of metal on Brendel's black uniform and the gleam of stormtrooper armor shone in the darkness. "We can't go directly through Clawland," Phasma said, immediately addressing the question on everyone's mind. "We don't know how hungry his people are for blood. If they're smart, they'll send a contingent out into the sands toward Brendel's ship, while leaving a defensive force to maintain their territory and harvest the bodies."
"Harvest the bodies?"
Brendel asked, half disgusted and half curious.
"Siv, explain."
Siv reached into her pack and pulled out a Detraxer.
"As you know, our planet is sick. The sun is too harsh. The rain burns our skin.
And we can't get all the nutrients we need from our food, which leads to disease, brittle bones, and loose teeth. When someone dies, we use the detraxers to reclaim what minerals and liquids we can. And I craft those nutrients into a bomb we call Oracle Salve. Every member of the band receives an allotment. Spreading it on the skin ensures we remain as healthy as we can be, protected from the elements. The Claw people use them as well.
It's inelegant, but necessary, Phasma said, her voice harsh and brooking no refusal.
I see,
Brendel said, always diplomatic.
And how did you come to possess this machine?
It's been passed down since the cities died. They once used them on food animals. My mother taught me how to care for them.
Siv stroked the worn leather lovingly.
And I've made some improvements. My mother's Oracle Salve smelled like rancid fish, but mine at least smells...
like fresher fish,
Carr broke in, and Siv elbowed him with a grin.
It's barbaric,
Brendel noted.
Siv bristled. No, it's holy. It's how to keep your people strong, even as you leave them. Body to body, dust to dust.
Death is inevitable, but it means the rest of the tribe will be stronger, Phasma said. She looked around the circle, gazing into each person's eyes as the sun came up, and giving a long look to each stormtrooper, their faces, as always, hidden behind their helmets.
Learn to respect both ends of this machine, if you wish to survive your time on Parnassos.
Do you not have such problems among your people?
Gosta asked. The girl was in awe of Brendel and his troops, just as she was in awe of Phasma and her warriors. Brendel's smile was kinder when he spoke to the girl.
No, child, we do not. We benefit from the greatest advances in technology and medicine. We simply add the vital nutrients to our food so that we stay strong.
But where do you get them from, then?
We buy them from merchants.
But where do the merchants get them?
Brendel wasn't smiling now.
These foolish questions waste valuable time. The wonderful thing about civilization is that you buy what you need, thereby supporting merchants and artisans. Where the sellers source their goods is not my problem. But I assure you that they do not come from humans. Such things are generally frowned upon in more civilized parts of the galaxy.
Gosta looked crushed, but Phasma spoke next. I look forward to benefiting from such civilization. But until that time, we will use all available resources to get us off this planet. There is no shame in using every advantage to staying alive. Brendel seemed surprised when one of the stormtroopers spoke next, his voice strange and somewhat amplified by his helmet.
We had something similar on Automach, but for beasts. It's similar to a moisture detraxer.
Phasma's warriors couldn't miss Brendel's sneer as he turned to look at the trooper and noticeably glanced down at his number.
Perhaps you forget, PT-2445, that I have visited Automach several times, as well as planets with even harsher conditions. And when on those planets, I still hold my rank.
Yes, General Hux. Sorry, sir.
Brendel nodded. But there was a chill among the group now. On Parnassos, with everyone fighting to survive, such formalities were saved for rare instances of ritual or leadership, like Keldo's pronouncement from his throne in the Nautilus. During regular moments, everyone was considered equal. Apparently that was not how things were done in the First Order. The stormtrooper did not speak again. As for Phasma, she was already looking beyond the group to the hard line of the horizon. Siv knew her leader had carefully noted where Brendel's ship had landed and where the smoke had risen, and although they didn't know the lay of the land between here and there, they all expected trouble. No matter which direction we go, we're headed into land we've never seen before. Eat and drink, apply your salve, and then prepare your rope lines. It's a long way down the other side of these mountains.
How do you know?
Gosta asked. Phasma gave her a long stare.
We know there's flat land beyond these rocks, because we've seen what's on the other side of Baldur's territory. It stands to reason that land would stretch to these rocks. Does anyone disagree?
No one dared. Not even Brendel.
It will be, I think, several days to the fallen ship, even without major impediments. We may encounter animals and people, or we may simply face harsh conditions, unlike those of our own land. General Hux, can you tell us what you saw of the terrain between your ship being shot down and your journey to Baldur's Plateau?
Brendel considered.
We used the escape pods shortly after being hit. Each pod fits 6 people and we had 11 bodies, so we had 2 pods. 2 pilots in the cockpit were already dead, so our pod only held the 4 of us and the droid. We haven't seen the other pod, nor have we been able to communicate with the others through our comm system. There's no telling if the other 5 troopers made it. We were unable to see what happened to the ship, but when we exited the pod, the smoke was quite far away. At least the smoke suggests it didn't land in the ocean, which would make it irretrievable. The land we saw was all sand, just endless sand. We walked for the plateau because we could see smoke, which meant people. We did not expect to be greeted by a murderous dog and claimed as spoils. The look on his face suggested that he would have very much liked to have been the one who stabbed Baldur.
I've never walked on sand,
Torben noted.
What's it like?
Phasma's people looked to her, but she nodded to Brendel.
It shifts under your feet. Coarse and rough, irritating, gets everywhere, slips into your clothes and boots.
But you passed no animals or people on your way to Baldur's Land, Phasma pressed.
Brendel shook his head.
No one and nothing. We feared we were on an entirely uninhabited planet, although we did see several factory complexes and uninhabited cities from the sky.
How far away?
In my ship? Mere hours. By foot, several days, most likely. It's hard to make accurate navigational estimates while plummeting to one's death.
He sighed and went a bit wistful.
It's a shame we landed here where the terrain is so unforgiving. Across the ocean, there is a larger continent, lush and green. As you told your brother, if we are able to reach my ship, perhaps your people can be moved there to give them a better chance of reclaiming what once was. Perhaps there are survivors there. A civilization.
Perhaps, Phasma said. But we know for a fact there is a better life among your stars.
May I speak with you privately?
Brendel asked. Phasma's warriors had always understood that they lived under 2 rulers, with Phasma acting as the muscle and Keldo as the brains and spirit. It was easy enough to accept that Brendel would now be one of their leaders, and it made sense to them at the time that Brendel might wish to talk to Phasma alone. The pair disappeared around a cluster of larger stones, their whispers obscured. Now, when people grow up in small bands in rough lands, they become accustomed to never having privacy, and to giving those who seek seclusion what little space they can. The warriors turned their backs to Phasma and Brendel and began talking among themselves, gabbling about their hopes for a new home, whether it be on a nearby continent made of solid ground or up in the stars wearing white armor. The 3 troopers stood outside this circle looking very out of place.
Do you like it?
Gosta asked one of the stormtroopers, pointing at the starry sky.
Up there?
The man considered her and seemed like he was about to answer, but PT-2445 interrupted them.
We shouldn't be talking,
he said.
Not without the General's permission. We are not at ease.
With his helmet on, it was impossible to guess what the silenced trooper might be feeling. Still, he must have agreed with his compatriot as he did not answer the question and instead turned away, hand on his blaster. Phasma's warriors traded looks. Would a good leader prevent his soldiers from speaking their minds? Did these warriors give up their own power, their own personalities, so easily? It was a new way of doing things, and one that didn't sit well with the free folk of the Skyre. The sun was coming up as Phasma and Brendel returned from their private conversation. Phasma must have used part of their time to prepare the other leader for the next step of their journey, as Brendel now wore Skyr gloves with climbing claws and had a pair of spikes tied tightly around his shining black boots. He was an awkward man, as you know, mostly belly and sneer, and he stumbled as he walked and grew accustomed to the new tools. Phasma reached into one of her packs and tossed out 3 more pairs of gloves and boot spikes, all stolen from the Nautilus, which her warriors quickly helped the troopers strap on. They were almost ready to go, and Phasma looked to Siv, who held out the pot of Oracle salve. It was a dense greenish-black, and Phasma dipped in 2 fingers and drew dark lines under her eyes. Siv held out the pot to each of the Skyr members, who did the same. When she held it out to Brendel, he shook his head in disgust.
"We can survive a few days before resorting to such indelicacies," he said.
"Suit yourself," Phasma said, pulling on her mask. "Let's go."
Again, her warriors traded glances. They were accustomed to knowing Phasma's secret plans, even when Keldo didn't. But this time, she revealed nothing. They, too, put on their masks. If they were to die on the mountain, they would die fierce. The mountain itself represented a new kind of challenge. The Skyr folk had to use all their tools and tricks to navigate the perilous ledges of the jagged tower of rock. It was hundreds of meters to the sandy ground below, and they had to edge around the sheer cliff face using only their boot spikes and hand claws, all while roped to one another, the impossibly maladroit Brendel, and the clumsy troopers. With every slip of a foot or breaking bit of rock, the entire group clung to the mountain, bracing themselves to absorb the weight of a falling body. Phasma and Torben kept Brendel between them, showing him where to plant his spikes and keeping him close so he couldn't drag them down. Each step took them around the mountain and down just the smallest bit. The wind whistled past, and curious seabirds rode the air, watching and hoping for the signs of an imminent feast of crushed human down below. Now anyone canny and strong enough to grow to adulthood in the Skyr knew that a smart climber never looked down. But everyone later admitted to looking down anyway. It wasn't often they had the chance to see something totally new for the first time. On the side of the mountain they'd come from, the dark and familiar ocean endlessly bit at the rock. But on the far side, the mountain began as a straight face, then gradually began to slope down to yet another dark sea. Endless gray sand. When the morning sun struck the valley below, it sparkled in vibrant reds and oranges, a beautiful sight promising the rare chance to walk without fear of tumbling to one's death. Siv confessed that this sight was so unexpected and arresting she nearly let go of the mountain. If she had, I suspect we wouldn't be here talking right now. When everyone is distracted and one person falters, there tends to be a grand tragedy, does there not? Step by step they edged around the mountain, ever closer to the sandy ground. The sun reached its zenith and the air began to warm. The Skyr folk began to twitch and shake their heads, sweating under their masks. They'd never felt this kind of heat before. Although the sun was harsh back home, they were always cold, thanks to the ocean's chill, the cutting winds, and the shade from taller rocks. But now, sweat began to trickle into their eyes and down their backs. Taking off their masks wasn't an option. The wind swept sand into every pore, while the sun beat down with more than its usual punishment. Poor Brendel was the only one without any face protection, and nothing could be done for him until they were on the ground and able to access their packs. Every finger and toe was lodged into a crevice in the rock. He was soon traversing the mountain with his eyes squeezed shut, gloves and boot tips probing blindly for cracks, his cheeks red, and his lips already blistering. The troopers were surprisingly tenacious for all that their armor made them bulky. Siv noted that whatever training they'd had was well done. The 3 troopers were physically fit, strong, and able to quickly master the art of climbing. No one complained, not even Brendel, who was clearly having problems. Even Phasma's warriors suffered, as their usual terrain involved leaping and rappelling from spire to spire, not clinging to a rock face for hours on end. Their arms began to ache and burn, their curled toes going numb in their boots. Each time someone found a ledge, they took turns standing there for just a moment, swinging their arms and bending their knees, urging feeling back into their bones. If not for those small moments of mercy, someone would have made a misstep. But by some miracle, no one did. Phasma's boots were the first to hit sand sometime after noon. She gave a cry of triumph that drew every eye. For the first time in living history, a Skyer stood on the actual planet. Not high above on a rock, not in a cave, but on solid enough ground with nowhere to fall. Next, Brendel hopped down, and Phasma had to help catch and steady him. When Torben jumped down, the sand puffed around him like gray smoke, and he laughed his booming laugh, making Siv smile. One by one, the warriors and troopers landed on the sand. The Skyer folk couldn't help flipping back their masks to look down and marvel at the feel of actual land beneath their feet, and they undid their ropes and knelt or sat in the sand, amazed at the sensation. For all of their lives until that moment, they'd been aware that they were high above the land, and that falling from such great heights meant death. Here, there was nowhere to fall. Siv had never felt so safe, for all that they were in entirely new territory. She learned later that the sand was half mineral and half volcanic ash, which accounted for its feathery softness and tendency to billow up and irritate eyes and mucous membranes. As for Carr, he removed a glove and ran sand through his fingers, laughing. His laughter stopped abruptly.
Ouch!
Phasma leapt to his side. What's wrong? Carr held up a hand to show a raised red bump.
Something bit me, I think. There it is!
He pointed to a tiny, shiny creature burrowing swiftly back into the gray sand, and Phasma dug for it and pinned it between two fingers of her glove. It was a beetle with a gold carapace, horns, and a sharply pointed proboscis. Held in the sun, it glittered gold and green with an entire iridescent rainbow in between. Of course, I can describe it to you because I've been to Parnassus and studied one, but none of Phasma's people had ever seen anything like it before.
It's pretty, Gosta said.
Phasma held it up to the light, and a single drop of blood fell from the insect's proboscis and plopped in the sand, where it was immediately soaked up. All around the drop of blood, more beetles exploded out of little hills of sand, furiously sweeping the area with their own proboscises and sucking up the blood-covered grains. Crushing the beetle between her fingers, Phasma threw the wet golden-black carcass into the mess of beetles fighting over the drop of blood. The beetles fell upon their fellow, devouring every drop of viscous fluid within until there was nothing left but sparkling shards of exoskeleton. As soon as the moisture was gone, the beetles burrowed back underground, leaving the once smooth sand pebbled with peculiar cone-shaped mounds. Phasma stood.
Gloves stay on, and don't remove them without my say-so. Does it feel infected?
Carr looked at the throbbing red wound and slipped his glove back on with a wry grin.
It feels silly, and a bit embarrassing. To think, I lost a fight with a bug.
Phasma sighed, but no one could be angry with Carr for long.
Be serious for once.
It itches, but I don't feel the fever.
Let me know if you do. General Hux, are you familiar with this creature?
Brendel shrugged.
Not this particular species. Every desert has insects that hunger for moisture. Still, I agree. Better to stay away and avoid giving them what they want.
He was still squinting through the blowing sand, his eyes gone red and puffy. Now that they were on the ground, Phasma was able to pull a length of cloth from her pack and help him wind it around his face, leaving only his watery blue eyes exposed. Gosta stepped forward to offer him a pair of ragged old goggles, which he accepted matter-of-factly. When Siv again held out the pot of oracle salve, he considered it more carefully, but still did not accept the gift. When Brendel was outfitted to withstand the sands, Phasma looked to his troopers and said,
It would be best if we could further stain your armor. The clean parts stand out in this gray desert.
They were already somewhat dingy from their earlier trek, but the troopers must have concurred. One of the soldiers took up a handful of the sand and rubbed it into his armor, where it left a dark gray sheen. Soon all three troopers were staining their armor with help from the Skyr folks, all of whom were careful to keep on their gloves and check every handful of sand for more of the blood beetles. When the white armor and helmets had been more uniformly stained a messy gray, Phasma nodded her approval and began walking. The Skyr folk had already wound up their climbing ropes and removed their boot claws, and they followed their leader into the great unknown. XV. On Parnassus, 10 years ago. The gray sand stretched in every direction beyond the mountains as far as the eye could see. It rose up in great dunes patterned in windy waves and plummeted into deep valleys. To the Skyr folk, it resembled the sea they'd so often watched from their stone perches, a dark, unforgiving, roiling thing, and yet uncomfortably, unnaturally still. There were no plants or animals anywhere to be seen. The farther they walked from the mountain and stone towers of the borderlands, the more agitated everyone became. They'd never spent a day of their lives without clinging to a tall spire, and it was disorienting to be mired in shifting sand, each step sinking and sliding. There were no landmarks, no clear goals, no place to hide. Brendel and his troops somehow seemed more stolid, traversing the desert as if comfortable there, and it happened that Gosta grew brave, or perhaps terrified enough, to ask them about it.
"We've visited planets all over the galaxy," Brendel said, not slowing in his slog forward, although his lack of athletic conditioning kept him breathing heavily. "Desert planets, water planets, ice planets, and ruined planets like yours, with all sorts of topographies and environments. Every environment has its own unique mercies and horrors. Even in the harshest conditions, like these..."
He looked around, and although no one could see him frown through his wrappings, it was clear he was uneasy.
"You're never as alone as you think you are."
"But if we don't find water soon, we'll be in trouble, won't we?"
the girl asked.
"We'll continue," Phasma said, her voice hard. "We move forward. We'll find what we need, or we won't. But we'll get there."
Her words made the Skyr folk nervous. What did Phasma have planned, and why was she suddenly so very determined? They'd seen her fight against all odds and take great risks for her people, but the way she marched through the sand without pause struck them as almost suicidal. Carr was the last one in line, and as the day wore on, it became apparent that he was slowing down. Siv fell back with him to inquire about his health, but he just shook his head.
"I feel dizzy and feverish," he said, "and not in the good way."
"The fever?"
He gave a sad laugh, a pathetic echo of his usual good humor.
"When your skin feels like it's on fire, and your skull feels like it's going to burst, one fever is the same as the next, I suppose."
When she pulled up his mask and put a hand to his forehead, he was almost cold. There was a strange color mottling his usually tan face, a worrisome paleness. She could see a blue vein just under the skin of his temple beating rapidly with his heart.
"Phasma, come look at this,"
Siv called, and Phasma left Torben and Brendel to lead the pack as she hurried to the end of the line.
"What's wrong?"
"Carr feels lightheaded and hot, but his skin is cold."
Phasma lifted her own mask for a better look and frowned at what she saw.
"Show me your wound from earlier."
When Carr slipped off his glove, they were surprised to see that the beetle's wound was nearly gone. It had been swollen, red, and hard right after the bite, but it appeared to be healing nicely, leaving just a light pink rash around the pinprick puncture wound. Phasma put her hand to his forehead and checked the whites of his eyes, but in the end she only shook her head.
"We must keep walking. Let me know if anything changes. If this is an infection, it's different from the dangers we face in our territory. It's not the fever, at least. Stay vigilant. Apply more salve. And put your mask on. If you're contagious, we need to take precautions.
I'll try not to kiss anyone,
Carr murmured. Still he obeyed, drawing on a second set of stripes with Siv's salve and pulling down his mask, as Siv did hers. Phasma jogged to the head of the line, and everyone continued walking. The Skyr folk could hear Phasma consulting with Brendel in a hushed voice, and they thought they heard talk of his promised medicines. That was good, then. Their leader was making plans to help their injured friend. They were a close-knit folk, and they would all pitch in to make sure Carr reached Brendel's ship, even if they had to take turns carrying him. They walked all afternoon, stopping once in the shade at a dune to nibble jerky and take careful sips from their water skins. Phasma had distributed multiple skins to each person, taken from the stores of the Nautilus, but Siv ran the numbers and instantly knew it wasn't enough to get them to Brendel's ship. This far from their territory and without a living plant or creature in sight, water would be an increasing worry. At home, they had other ways of collecting enough to drink, and although there was rarely more than they needed, they'd never prepared for a spell as dry as this one. Collecting and filtering urine was a regular part of life, but they would eventually run out of that, too. The Skyr folk didn't speak their worries out loud, though. Phasma would take care of them. They had to believe that. The desert heated up with the afternoon sun beating down, and although they were tempted to lift up their masks and tug off their wraps to let the wind cool their sweating skin, they knew better. Keeping covered was always a better option. Any slice of exposed flesh would quickly burn and possibly blister without a thick coating of salve. The sun was not as kind as it had once been. When Siv looked back, she saw Carr lagging even farther behind, his mask up on his head. His cheeks were swollen and pale, his eyes bulging somewhat, his lips dry and puffy.
I know,
he said, catching her watching him.
I look terribly handsome.
You need to rest.
I can rest later. Help me up the hill.
Siv hurried to his side and helped drag him up the next dune, feeling him wobble against her as if he'd lost his once solid sense of balance. It would be days yet before they reached Brendel's ship, and Carr would slow down the entire group if he didn't shake off this new sickness. When they crested the dune, they were dismayed to find it was the first in a series of high hills straining into the horizon like a sea of gigantic waves. The wind was high along the top, and they jogged down each hill into the cool of the valley before slogging up the next hill. Time stretched out strangely then, Siv told me, as they constantly struggled up and down but didn't seem to go anywhere, didn't make any visible progress. It was like battling the same enemy again and again, never gaining a foothold. All too much like their old life in the Skyr, truth be told. Any wonder at the new world was lost to dread and discomfort, plus worry for Carr. The muscles used for walking in sand proved very different from those used for climbing and leaping among rocks. Their arms still ached from clambering down the cliff face. It was, in many ways, an unexpected hell for a people forged in the crucible of struggle. I've seen these dunes, and I can't imagine what kind of mindset it would take to tackle them without simply lying down to die in a valley. We grow so accustomed to our speeders, our ships, our hyperdrives. To be in a world where only your feet can move you, centimeter by centimeter through infinity? Let's just say there's a reason Phasma wanted off that rock. The sun was setting as they tumbled down a dune into the valley below, cold with shadow and whispering with eerie wind. Carr was the last one down, and he slid like dead weight, landing on his back at Siv's feet. We'll camp here tonight, Phasma said. Keep covered. Recycle bodily fluids. Every drop counts. Be careful with your supplies. Sleeping close will conserve body heat. She sighed heavily and added, It's going to be difficult, but I won't hear any complaints. Her warriors nodded listlessly, and the troopers looked to Brendel, who added,
Phasma is correct. Conserve your resources.
They sat in smaller groups to eat, the Skyr warriors together and Phasma sitting beside Brendel with his troops. The three armored soldiers took off their helmets for the first time, and Siv was oddly fascinated to see that they were just people like any others, their hair shorn close to their heads and their skin sweaty and red. One of them was a woman, although it was only perceptible through her facial structure, and she had her hair cropped the same as the men. Her armor showed no difference in physiognomy, and Siv recalled being pleased that among the First Order, women were considered equals and warriors. Her mother had told her stories, you see, of a different world, in which women were considered somehow weaker or lesser. Perhaps that prejudice had died off as it was determined that the women of the Skyr could climb better than the men, and began to outnumber them among the warriors. At that time, however, sitting in the dune's shadow with these strange folk from beyond the stars, Siv considered what it would be like to wear the shining white armor herself, to be faceless and mighty, and one of countless others fighting for a worthy cause. Were her people bothered that their leader sat with the strangers instead of among her own folk? A little, but they also understood that Brendel Hux was a powerful commander in his own right, and that leaders often spent time together making plans for the betterment of the people. They still had trouble understanding Brendel sometimes, thanks to his sharp accent and some odd changes to his vocabulary. If anything, Siv said they felt some pride, that a woman of the Skyr would be considered the equal of a wealthy, powerful general who commanded starships. As for Carr, he was growing listless, staring off into space and swaying a little as he sat. He refused the jerky Siv offered him and nibbled only at some dried sea vegetable, gulping down his allotted sips of water. He had no bodily waste to add to the recycling unit, though, which was the sort of thing that was noticed when water was scarcer than usual. He was the first one asleep, falling to the ground in a puff of gray sand and snoring gently through swollen lips. There was nothing they could do for him. This was a new ailment, and their only hope was that it would go away on its own, or be easily fixed by the medical equipment Brendel promised was waiting on his ship. The next morning, Carr was even worse. His flesh was swollen and pale, all the blue veins of his body visible and throbbing near the skin. He reminded Siv of the creatures that sometimes washed up from the deep sea, ghostly white and partially transparent, gasping for breath and crushed by the very air. His gloves were too tight on his swollen hands and nearly had to be cut off with a knife. When asked how he felt, he couldn't speak. His tongue and lips were too swollen. He could only shake his head. But the surprise and fear Siv expected to see in his eyes wasn't there. He seemed sleepy and resigned. They pulled him to standing, and Torben helped her propel him up the next dune, Siv's every muscle burning as the injured man wobbled between them. As Phasma crested the dune's ridge, she was lit by the rising sun, half molten gold and half indigo shadow. She put up her hand to shield her eyes and screamed, "Enemies! Skaya! Fight!" as she clutched her spear and reached for the axe hanging on her belt. Siv and Torben had no choice but to drop Carr in the sand and run to Phasma's side, drawing their own weapons. The troopers pulled their blasters and began firing down the dune, and as Siv hit the top with Torben on her heels, she saw the attack unfolding. Figures swathed in gray seemed to glide across the sand, pulled by huge lizards with pebbled gray skin. They skimmed over the ground far faster than the Skyr group could run, and they held long, shivering lances tipped with glassy blades. Siv considered her blow darts, but she couldn't find skin on the attackers and didn't want to risk wasting the metal barbs. Instead, she pulled out her two curved scythes. The attackers were close now, six of them dragged by six lizards. A trooper's blast sent one of the lizards flailing down the dune, his master tumbling behind him. The five remaining skimmers didn't swerve. Phasma was closest, and she sidestepped the lizard's lunge and swiped her dagger across the folds of its neck, slicing deep into muscle and making the creature scream. The skimmer behind it was able to nimbly leap off a flat piece of metal and run at Phasma on over-large feet, and their silent fight drew everyone's eye. until the next skimmer glided near. It got past the troopers, but Torben was running right for it. He slammed his club into the lizard's skull, darted around it, and hacked into the skimmer's chest with his axe. The figure fell down, and Torben put a huge boot on its gut, ripped out his axe, and yelled his battle cry, splattered in blood just as red as his own. So these attackers were human, then? Probably. For all their strange costumes, they could die, and that emboldened the Skyr folk. Gold beetles erupted from the sand to lick up the blood, and Torben staggered back, hunting his next prey. Siv let out her own ululating scream and ran down the dune toward one of the skimmers, ready to do her duty for her people. The lizard dodged sideways, great mouth open to show hundreds of serrated teeth. Siv skidded to her back and slid along the sand, slicing up the creature's belly as she zipped underneath it and rammed her feet into the legs of the enemy pulled behind it. The figure fell over with an all-too-human curse. Before Siv could stand and continue fighting, little Gosta leaped over her, brandishing her blade and stabbed down in a vital spot while shouting her war cry. That skimmer didn't get up again. Gosta held out a hand to help Siv stand, and when she looked around, she saw that the Skyr warriors and their trooper guests had utterly destroyed the attackers and their lizards. The fight had been unusually quick and brutal. No enemies were left breathing, which meant no answers would be had. Where had these attackers come from? What did they want? Had their people traced the path of Brendel's ship across the sky, and were they too racing there to claim the bounty? It couldn't be helped. At least the Skyr folk had won. Well, that wasn't too bad, Siv said with a smile, but she didn't get to enjoy the victory for long. Quick! The Detraxers! Phasma barked. Siv hurried to the lizard she'd just gutted, pulling the first detraxer from her bag and jamming the spike deep into the creature's muscle. Considering the bloodthirsty beetles already scurrying into the bleeding cavity, she had to be quick. As soon as it was working, she went to the figure Gosta had just felled. Although she recognized that time was of the essence, she had to see who would be providing the life-giving essence for the salve that would protect the Skyr warriors on their journey. To Siv, this wasn't just a physical act. It was a ritual. Tugging at the wrappings on the figure's face, she didn't know what she would find. An alien species? A mutated human? Something native to Parnassus that they'd never seen wash up on the rocks? But it was a human like any other. A young woman, just like her. Medium brown skin, hair long and plaited under her wrappings. Clean and healthy. No visible signs of trauma or disease. Even the woman's teeth were intact. Siv closed the woman's brown eyes and said the quick prayer the Skyr folk always said when they harvested minerals and liquids from a body.
Thank you for giving me life. Your today protects my people's tomorrow. Body to body, dust to dust.
Before Phasma could bark at her again, she jammed the next detraxer into the meat of the woman's thigh and set it running. The Skyr folk and the troopers had taken no damage, and it was deemed a great victory. The nutrients and water skins they'd claim from their assailants would save their lives, and possibly help nourish Carr back from whatever trauma he was suffering. Siv collected her first detraxer from the now desiccated lizard, traded the full skin for an empty one, and jammed the machine into the next lizard. As both machines did their work, she joined the others in hunting among the human bodies for spoils and bags of water. They were careful to scrape the beetles away, crushing the pernicious things when necessary and never letting them get anywhere close to their skin. Each of their attackers carried pouches that hung over each hip, and although the Skyr folk didn't recognize everything within the pouches, they took them and grew determined to understand how to live in this arid place. The most valuable thing found in each pouch was a dried cake of densely packed minerals and salts that reminded Siv a little of the Detraxer's rich essence. The sleds the skimmers had ridden would be a great boon, allowing them to drag their packs effortlessly over the sand instead of carrying the weight, now increased by several skins of water.
The lizards were an especially rich resource, and Gosta was already slicing off strips of their dried meat for the road.
Oh! We can pull car,
Siv said, suddenly remembering that she and Torben had been forced to drop their fellow warrior to rush to their leader's side during the fight. Torben nodded and followed her back down the other side of the dune, dragging a sled behind him on its rope. Carr was just a dark lump at the bottom of the valley, fallen on his side, his breath ragged and troubled, and his heartbeat swiftly fluttering.
Carr, are you worse? Siv asked.
A low groan was the only answer.
Flip him over.
Torben gently turned Carr over so that he was facing up and helped him to sit. Carr seemed twice the size he'd once been, his body swollen and his flesh thin and pale and stretched. Siv reached for his bare hand to hold it and found that his fingernails were gone. They'd popped off and fallen to the sand.
Stay with us, old friend,
Torben said, so gentle despite his size and might.
We'll drag you behind us. We'll be your own personal sled lizards, and then Brendel Hux will fix you and take you up into the stars.
Carr moaned again and tried to close his eyes, but the lids wouldn't slide down over his bulging orbs.
Hurry!
Phasma called from the top of the dune. The Detraxas are full and ready to be moved, and we need to leave before someone comes looking for these people. Torben nodded to Siv, who pulled the sled closer. Carr shuddered and groaned, and Siv stopped tugging on the sled to focus on him. He was quivering, shaking all over, his eyes wide open and his lips and swollen tongue struggling to speak.
What is it?
Siv asked. In response, Carr rolled his eyes toward her and shuddered. His skin trembled, too swollen to touch. He gave one last moan and exploded in a cloud of water. It was as if his skin had dissolved and liquid splattered Siv and Torben and sank into the sand, coloring it a deep black. There wasn't much blood, and his organs appeared to be shriveled, dark things connected by pale blue tubes and nearly translucent bones. As Siv stood and stepped back, watching in horror, the ground around Carr's clothes erupted in beetles bursting out of their cones of sand and licking at the water with their long proboscises.
Up! Get away!
She shouted at Torben, who was frozen in shock and grief. The big man stood and stumbled back as yet more of the bright beetles, hundreds upon thousands of them, ripped out of the sand to gorge upon the water that had been their friend and fellow warrior. Beetles sucked on his shrunken organs and tried to scuttle up Siv's legs to lap at the liquid soaking her pants, but she knocked them off and ran a few steps farther back.
Both of you, come away!
Siv and Torben looked up to find Phasma at the top of the dune, haloed in morning light as she watched them, axe and spear still in hand. Brendel stood by her side, his head canted curiously as he watched the horror unfold.
But Carr, Siv said. He's gone now. He can't be reclaimed. He can't nourish his people. Now it's up to us. We must prepare what we can and go.
At least he's in no more pain,
Brendel added, but his words sounded hollow and cloying. He hadn't lost any of his people, and Siv suspected that if he had, he wouldn't have mourned them. Never had Skyre folk died without in turn nourishing their people. Even those who fell into the ocean were thought to feed the creatures there, and those creatures eventually died and washed up on the rocks, where the Skyre would use them for clothes, food, and moisture. But Carr was simply gone. There was no prayer to say over him that worked.
Thank you for being you,
Siv said, standing over bones wrapped in wet clothes and covered in frantic, vicious beetles.
Yes, thank you,
Torben added, before putting a hand on her shoulder and gently urging her up the dune.
Carr was a good friend and a fine warrior.
For all the hills they'd climbed in the desert,
That one was the hardest. When they finally struggled to the top, Siv saw that Phasma had moved some steps farther away and was squatting with Brendel in hushed conversation.
"This one's done,"
Gosta said, gesturing to the second lizard, which was now no more than a loose skeleton wrapped in leathery hide and dry as the air itself. The detraxer was full and purring, and Siv knelt to switch out the skin and place the siphon in the next lizard. As she worked, she described every step for Gosta, showing her how the pieces of the detraxer fit together and how they had to be cleaned. No one else among them knew how to work the machines or concoct the salve, and she had to pass this knowledge on. It was dangerous here among the dark sands, and Siv might be the next to fall to some unknown terror. With no child yet to pass on her knowledge, as her mother had passed it on to her, she would teach Gosta all that she knew. That was all they had in the Skyre. One another. And hope. 16. On Parnassus, 10 years ago. While Siv and Gosta worked on claiming as many nutrients from the fallen as possible, Phasma directed the rest of the crew in harvesting the meat of the lizards and adding the light layers of clothing the attackers had worn to their own costumes. "If we look more like them, perhaps they won't attack so quickly next time," she explained, slipping her arms through wispy gray robes the color of the sand. Their next focus was on the troopers, covering their armor with cloth so they didn't stand out against the stark landscape. Brendel Hux was an odd figure, his sharp black clothes hidden under long robes and tied with a sash around his paunchy belly, a feature none of the Skyre warriors had ever seen on another human. In the Skyre, ribs were countable, and stomachs were convex. As they stripped the bodies down to skin, they found a carved wooden box hanging around the neck of each of their attackers. Phasma opened one, and everyone was amazed to see yet another beetle like the one that had bitten Carr.
"What is it?"
Gosta asked. "A weapon," Phasma guessed, snapping the box shut. "The beetle bites someone, and whatever they inject into the body silently destroys the flesh and organs. An easy and elegant way to kill unsuspecting enemies."
"Clever," Brendel mused.
"Dangerous." Phasma tossed the closed box down the dune, where it tumbled into obscurity. Since Torben had nothing to contribute to the harvesting, he stomped on beetles while he kept watch for more raiders. Every time a drop of blood from a kill hit the sand, one or more beetles burrowed up to gorge on it, and Torben pulverized them with his club, or stomped them with his great boots, leaving shiny gold husks covered in thick black goop that attracted yet more beetles. As time went on and the detraxers did their brutal work, the beetles seemed to be crawling in from far away, making long streaks of gold across the sand, and the troopers joined him in crushing them. As they cut strips of desiccated meat from the last of the lizards, there were so many beetles that stomping them wasn't enough. After Brendel smacked one off his robe, he grimly announced,
"It is time to go."
Phasma nodded and did not argue, Siv noted. There was no question regarding whether they should follow the sled tracks that were being swiftly obscured by wind. They had no time to find out where their attackers had come from. This was a rescue mission, with the sole purpose of getting Brendel Hux to his ship, not a raid or even a scouting errand. The warriors, so inquisitive about this new part of the world, didn't have the luxury of curiosity, and would have to hope the attack had been pure coincidence. Phasma scanned the desert with her quadnox, following the sled tracks over a dune off to the right. Siv knew her well enough to know she was marking the spot in her mind, adding it to her flawless mental map of the planet's topography. Loading Carr's pack and the bags of the raiders onto two of the sleds, the group took off down the other side of the dune and headed onward toward the fallen ship. The curl of white smoke had long since disappeared, but Phasma and Brendel both agreed they were headed in the direction where his ship had crashed. Torben pulled both sleds as Siv and Gosta shouldered the packs containing the cleaned and ready detraxers and their skins. For all that no one would ever welcome an attack, Their quick defense and fighting skills had earned the water and nutrients they had so sorely needed for their journey. Overall, it was considered a good omen, and everyone felt confident, if wary, that should more of the skimmers appear, they would be prepared to meet the challenge. Siv looked back over her shoulder to the bodies on the dune, sand already shifting to cover what was left of their skin and bones. Lizard and human alike, they would soon be lumps, and then merely smooth sand. She was glad she couldn't see down into the valley to the remains of her friend. And she couldn't help wondering how many dead things slumbered under the glittering gray dunes. Poor Carr. In all her 20 years, Siv had never seen a Skyr member die in such a strange and discomforting manner. Even those lost to the sea fed the sea creatures, and it was considered a valiant and natural death. But here, in these strange and endless sands, Carr's bones wouldn't find their home in the hidden caves of the Nautilus. His remains would slowly be hidden by sand and forgotten forever, surrounded by enemies and emptiness. It was a lonely place, and his good nature and hearty laugh would be sorely missed around the campfire. Still, life in the Skyr was rough and short, and Siv had seen many friends die. It was considered weakness to mourn too much, so she turned her face to the hot sun and followed Phasma onward to their destiny. For the rest of that afternoon, they saw nothing but sand and dunes. Up each dune they trudged, pulling their sleds and carrying their packs and carefully sipping the smallest amount of liquid. At the crest of the dune, they couldn't help halting, scanning the area ahead for something, anything that was not sand. Again and again, they were disappointed. All they saw were endless gray dunes, rising in endless waves against an endless sky of molten blue. Gray clouds bunched, far off, darkening the horizon back the way they'd come. The Skyr seemed doomed to dwell under an oppressive pall and the threat of thunder. But here, just a few days away, not a single cloud dotted the sky. There was nothing to provide either shade or the hope of water. The air wavered over the sand, the dry heat bouncing up to burn Siv's eyes. The land itself drove them forward, spurring them toward the promise of Brendel's ship and the imagined peace and coolness of space. That evening, Phasma stopped at the top of a dune and held out her hand in the universal signal to approach with caution. Siv turned to meet Torben's gaze, and he transferred both sled ropes to his left hand and hefted his club. Up ahead, Phasma pulled out her quadnocks, looked through them briefly, and then passed them to Brendel, who also gazed for quite some time.
"What do you make of it?" he asked.
Phasma shook her head.
"This is not our territory. We know nothing of this place. Have you not seen something like it before in your travels?"
The reprimand in her tone must have escaped him. He shook his head and frowned his pinched little frown.
"I can't even tell what it is. Animal or mineral, we shall find out. It's directly in our path."
Phasma looked to her people.
"Draw your weapons. Be ready."
"What is it?"
Gosta asked, cresting the dune by Phasma's side.
"We don't know,"
was all Phasma said. Phasma and Brendel led on, the troopers and Gosta behind them. Siv and Torben came last, their weapons drawn. As they topped the dune, Siv was itching with curiosity. What could possibly have both Phasma and Brendel at a loss? What she saw beyond gave her no answers. The sand stretched out flat for a long time, with no dunes for what would be several hours of walking. Out in the middle of that infinite flatness was a large black mound. From this distance, and with the air wavering and hot and full of whipping gray sand, it was truly impossible to guess at what it might be, or even how large it was, or if it was alive. The shape was black with sparks of reflected sun here and there that suggested something about it was shifting or possibly metallic. It was lumpy and seemed big. Bigger than a person. Bigger than the Nautilus. The sand around it was the same gray that had become their entire world, and there was nothing to mark a difference of topography, no greenery or rock or metal. Just the slightly heaving, shifting, dark blob out in the middle of nowhere. Now, one must remember that Siv and the other Skyr warriors had never seen anything living on land that was bigger than a human. They'd seen mouths in the ocean, but not the giant bodies they had to be attached to.